Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, September the 26th, 2009. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today, I am honored and pleased to bring Loretta Kelsey Childress, author of the book, The Turning Point of Lilla Louise. Loretta has also written a children's book, which I'm excited to talk about with her today, and several short stories which we'll discuss with her. And she hails from sunny California. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Loretta.
Thank you, Denise. Thank you so much for having me.
I want to just begin by letting our listeners know, Loretta and I, our paths crossed actually on Ola Jackson's Onyx Woman Network. Ola is a she owns the Onyx Woman magazine, and she does radio and television and conferences, another phenomenal woman. So I'm so glad that our paths crossed. But when I went to Loretta's website and I saw that, you know, it's so well laid out and just a vibe, it was a vibe there that I picked up, a very strong, positive vibe. And so she became someone I definitely want to support. And to our loyal listeners here at Off the Shelf, some who've been with us for going on 6 years, we're going to bring her back and when her books come out so we can support her. But the first question I wanted to ask you, Loretta, was how did you become a writer? If you could just share with us your journey toward becoming, toward how you became a writer.
Okay. Well, when I was younger, I used to love to write poetry. I've had people tell me, oh, your poetry should be Hallmark cards. And I just really like to write. And, you know, our paths just take different direction. I just stopped writing after probably when I got into my teenage years. I stopped writing. A couple years ago, I had a back surgery, and in the middle of the night, and this is no lie, late in the midnight hour, I heard God speak to my spirit, get up and write. And
wow.
I was just like, what? And I mean, I tossed and turned for a good 10 minutes, and the more I tossed and turned, it got stronger and stronger. So I got up, I remember it was a little after midnight, and I just started writing, and, I mean, it was flowing out of me like a water out of a spigot. And by 6 o'clock in the morning, I had over 100 pages written.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was the turning point of Lilla Louise. Now, over the years, you know, I've played with it and added more to it and, you know, just started refining the story.
Uh-huh.
And in the meantime, I started writing more poetry, and it's just been a blessing. I've been writing poetry for church and it's just amazing how God has renewed my gift.
Wow.
And so one day I looked at Lilla Louise. I said, okay, I think you're ready. And I started sending it out. Of course, you know, you get rejection letters. I kept all those, and I said, I'm going to use these as encouragement to keep going. I didn't do it constantly. So it's, like I said, it's been about 4 or 5 years in the making. And then finally I had went to one of these websites, and they were saying they were taking new authors. So I sent my manuscript in. And the lady had it for a while, and she sent it back and said, oh, you're a beautiful, gifted writer, but you just don't fit what I have right now.
Right.
However, keep in touch with me because I would love to get your work published.
Okay.
So we went back and forth with that for a minute. And, you know, after 2 weeks of asking her, could she help me, you know, I was getting excuses. I said, okay, God, I'm just going to leave this alone because maybe she was just being nice and putting that post-it on the blog that she wrote me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 4 or 5 weeks later after that, she said, Loretta, you are on my mind. And I looked down the rest of the email. She said, I want to publish your book. Let me read your manuscript first. And I sent it to her. She had it forever. And next thing I know, she sent me a letter that she wanted to publish my book. So that's how I got started.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is for our listeners, because some
mm-hmm.
people, everybody's in a different stage in their
mm-hmm.
life. And when you're in a hard stage, you can't see your way out. You don't think it's ever going to change.
Right.
I like to encourage people because I've been at difficult stages. And then at stages that it just felt like life was a breeze. But was there, not to get real personal about
mm-hmm.
it, but was there something that happened? You were a child when you started writing poetry, were you, Loretta?
Yes, I was. Well, I guess what made me stop, I was when I was younger, my parents had me in this private school. And I was probably the only African-American in the
wow.
school. So it was a type of, back then in the 60s, it was prejudice. So, well, 70s when I went to school. And I had written this term paper on fashion design. And at the time, my grandmother was going back to college, and she was at the University of Pittsburgh. And I worked on this project for months, and she took it to the college professor and said, could you read this paper?
Mm-hmm.
And he read it, and he said, my goodness, he said, this is the best paper I've ever read. And he said, who wrote this? And he said, this is my granddaughter wrote it. She's in ninth grade. He said, I have college students that can't write this well. So my grandmother gave it back to me. I was so excited, and I took it to school, and I got it back, and I got a D.
Ooh.
I cried and cried and cried, and I was so traumatized by that. My parents, that following week, they told that school that I would never be coming back to that school again. But, you know, when you're a young child, and hear one thing that you're writing so good, and then you get this devastating D with an upside-down smiley face, and I'm almost 50, and I can still see that paper with that upside-down smiley face. It just devastated me, and I just stopped writing.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, not only as children do things stop us, and I'm so happy to hear that you listen to the voice of our Creator telling you to get up and write, because for so many of us, something happens, and it might not be a horrible thing to other people, but it really impacts us, and we stop and don't ever go back to something. It could be trying to get into a school, to get a degree, to own your own business, become a something happens to, and I think that this might happen to all people, and a lot of us stop and never get back on the road again, and some of us stop for a while and get back on the road again. But I'm glad you shared that, because when we're going through struggles, a lot of times we think this is only happening to me, and it's good to hear other people say, something happened to me, and it really impacted me so strongly that it stopped me, but then I came back to it. So I think that that is a success story for you in and of itself. You came back to it, and you're writing now, and I think that is wonderful.
Thank you. You
also wrote a story titled The Path, which is featured in the anthology Gumbo for the Soul, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. Can you tell us what your story, The Path, is about, Loretta?
Yeah, that story was the base premise of that book is edited by Beverly Black Johnson. She's put all the Gumbo for the Soul series together, and that was about the whole series is about staying in college or staying in high school, you know, get your higher education. And that story for me was personal because it was really my struggle about going to school and trying to get a degree and how I haven't been able to achieve that next level because I don't have that degree. I know what I'm talking about. I'm a purchasing agent. I've been in purchasing for almost 20 years, but I can't get to that director level because of that piece of paper.
Okay.
So the story is basically about staying in school and how our life takes different paths, and sometimes we get derailed and we make the wrong choices, but we can't get back up and, you know, continue on and do what we need to do. So that's the premise of the story.
And you definitely had the material to write for with, because you actually lived it out yourself.
Yes, I did.
About Gumbo for the Soul, I know that the Tavis Smiley, he's internationally known television radio host. He wrote about the book, you know, Gumbo for the Soul tells African-Americans exactly what the recipe for a good life is. It is inspirational, uplifting, and recommended for people of all ages, colors, and aspirations. And I really like that the book focused on helping people to lower or eliminate, you know, high school, and you said also college dropout rates, and I think that's great. So I thank you for yourself contributing to that. From your own personal insight and experiences, and you already gave one, and I myself as a human resource professional, I've seen that degree, it's amazing what a college degree, how far it can take you, and how you can have all the skills in the world, but without that degree, you don't move to the next level. But with your personal insight and experiences, why do you think some other reasons so many people, Loretta, continue to drop out of high school, even with all this information that is in the long run is not the best choice? Why do you think so many young folks are still dropping out of high school?
I think a lot of kids drop out, but it goes back to home. You just don't have the stable Black family anymore. I was married once, and, you know, was single for 9 years, raising two girls, and, you know, I was blessed to get married again. But for a lot of people, a lot of women, that doesn't happen, and maybe it's whatever reason, but a lot of our young people live in poverty. They have young mothers raising children, you know, these 15 and 16-year-olds are raising children. They're still children, and there's no backbone to tell your children, you've got to go to school, whether you want to or not. I mean, you can talk to my kids. They were on punishment probably 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but they were getting out of high school. You know, and I just think that you just need to be on your children and get on them that there's consequences, that if you don't finish high school, you can't get anywhere, you know. And I tell my kids now, I don't have my degree, but look at me. I've been working all these years. Mm-hmm. I should be a CEO somewhere, but I'm not ever going to happen. That's never going to happen, and I have experience. I've trained people that were my bosses. But the bottom line is that piece of paper holds a lot of weight. And I think with these other countries in China and Japan, their children are so studious. They're coming over here and they're grabbing up some of the jobs because mm-hmm. they're highly educated. So we need to get focus on education and get our children educated. We're at the bottom of the list on all test scores, and that's just really sad.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I think more focus on it. There are people who drop out of high school, true enough, and go on and start their own business. So it's not like you can do it. But those people are
it's a rarity.
More rare. They're more rare than common. So I really would recommend, you know, students not only high school, but to go on and get a college degree. I don't have a college degree either, and I've seen where that it does make a difference. I don't think it holds me back because I still do what I want to do, but if I was staying in to climb up the corporate ladder, I would have to go back to school and get that degree. I really do think that. The United Nations declared the years 2002 through 2013 the literacy decade. And this, I just want to put one more emphasis on this. Since you began writing professionally, what have you learned, or what specific ways have you seen that individual writers, myself, you, and other writers, how we can help to strengthen global literacy efforts? What can authors do to help with this? What have you seen?
Well, what I haven't really seen, what I would like to see, and I really want to do is one of my projects, I really would like to see some type of program where authors get together and maybe just go on a not like a book tour, but just go on a tour to different schools and educate these young people and or educate them in the community and, you know, say, this is an avenue for you to have a better life. I think there's so much emphasis on nothing against rappers and, you know, or musicians, that they make a lucrative money. But like you said, you still need that education. You still need to be able to write the lyrics. I mean, how are you going to be a musician and you can't write? You need to be able to spell. I hate Ebonics. I wish they just would get rid of that, you know. I hate when people speak that way. It's really bad. And, I don't know how the Ebonics ever evolved, but it needs to go away. I think that authors, you know, just maybe in their community, just reach out to these young kids. If you see a young kid that likes to write or do any type of field work, that, architecture, who sees another aspiring architecture, just reach back and teach one child, and that child pays it forward. You know, and it just keeps building up the community. If everybody just takes one person, I think that the community and the schools, everybody would be better off.
I agree with you completely, Loretta. I know the Art Sanctuary in Philadelphia, and I'm affiliated with them. They send authors in to the schools. But that author's tour, I think that is a fabulous idea. That might be something I start kicking around, but that would be a good idea to go in to really encourage students to really focus on, because school after a while can get boring. Especially and you can have some bad teachers, too, and you can take a little energy towards school away from a student, but different things, things that are going on in their home to keep, it's so important. There's so many people. I forget the percentages in America alone, but I think it's about 10% or more that are functionally illiterate. They can read a little bit and write a little bit, but not a really enough to do a job that's beyond manual labor. That's something we do need to continue to focus on. The next thing I wanted to talk to you about was the anthology Women of Honor Special Pink Edition. Can you tell our listeners what that book is about?
Sure. Yeah, that's another compilation by Beverly Black Johnson. This is book number 3, I believe, in her series. It's honoring breast cancer survivors, and a portion of each book is going to a breast cancer organization, I believe, in San Francisco. I don't remember the exact name, but I know a portion of each book is going to that. And I just wrote a poem basically honoring these women, and it sums up, it doesn't matter if your breast is there or not, that you're still a woman. That's the gist of the poem. I think a lot of women, that they think, you know, from, I have some cancer survivors in my family, breast cancer survivors, and I think that they, because they don't have that piece of equipment, they feel that they don't have any value. I mean, that's not your whole person.
Right. No,
that's just a piece of you.
Right. No, I agree. And that is one of the most, the book Portia I wrote deals with a woman who had breast cancer. And I talked to people who actually went through it, and they said that that is one of the most devastating things about breast cancer, is having a part of your body removed. That's really devastating. And, it, of course, millions of women have adjusted to it. But that's not something that, it's just it's one of the toughest things about the disease. I have heard women that have a breast removed to have to psychologically and emotionally and physically deal with. I think it's good that you and can you tell us about Beverly Johnson, though? What is her background? She's wrote, this is her third anthology, you said?
Yeah, she's a compiler, and she's got together with the one guy from Death Poetry Jam right now. His name is escapes me, and she just decided that I believe she has a writing background, and she's an editor, and she decided just to pull different people together, famous, there's some famous people and non-famous people like myself that just contribute to these stories. And I think her second book in the series was Here's the Village, Here's the Child, Where's the Village, and that was about adoption. And she's just a wonderful lady, and she's just been so inspirational to me. Like I said, about going back, about paying it forward, she's just taught me so much and has inspired me, you know, with my writing, and I just really appreciate her.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's a new name. Thank you for sharing that about it. I don't think I've heard her name before, but
no, she's new.
The anthologies are very, the titles, and she sticks to a specific subject. They're very interesting. Do you think writing a reader for anthology, and this is for our listeners who might be new writers or who want to become a published writer, do you think writing for anthologies is a great way to get started in the book industry?
Most definitely. I mean, for me particularly, these anthologies, you didn't have to be famous, so that was number one. I want you to be aware, though, that a lot of these anthologies, you don't get paid. You get a copy of your book. But for me, it wasn't really about the money at this point in time. That'll come when it's supposed to. It was about getting exposure, you know, and just to sample my work. And that was the best place to showcase it. So now when I went out to find somebody to publish my novel, I could say I'm in these anthologies. So it makes you more credible, you know, than sending out query letters to people and you don't have any type of writing experience.
Okay, that's a good point. I know some publishers, when they do anthologies, some of them aren't legitimate, and it sounds like Miss Beverly Johnson definitely is. And they get writers to either pay to submit their story or to buy, you know, you got to buy 5 copies of the anthology after it's published if we you know, print your story. How can writers, because there are a lot of decent people out here, literary agents, editors, and there are a lot of them that aren't so decent, or maybe I should say some. How can writers make sure that they're working with a good anthology publisher, Loretta, and that they don't get taken advantage of?
Well, the main thing is that, you know, you need to do your research. The Internet's a wonderful tool. Never pay anybody to publish your work. That's number one. If you have to send any money or buy a certain number of books, run. Don't do it. There's a website I use called Predators and Editors. You can type in, you go to that site, and you can type in the name of the literary agency, an editor's name, a publisher's name, and it rates them and tells you if they're good or bad, or, you know, if there's been any discrepancies about that particular person or agency. And I love that website. That's probably my favorite one.
Predators and Editors, I've heard of them as well.
And I think it when you click in Predators and Editors, I think it takes you to anotherrealm.com, but it's the same site. And it's really a good site, and I've used that a lot. And then sometimes you just have to trust your gut, trust that spirit, if it says it's good or not. And, you know, with Beverly, she was new, and I just took a chance, and I love her.
That is so good. That, no, you're right. You do have to trust your instinct, and then also your higher self, and also I recommend that Predators and Editors site too, because a lot of folks who might not be well-meaning and just in it for the money,
mm-hmm.
and they can make you feel like what a Whitney Houston song, $1 million. They can make you feel like $1 million, and they're gonna try to take $1 million from you. So the Predators and Editors site is a good site, and I recommend that to listeners and writers who are coming up, or even have a seasoned writers. That's a good site to check out on literary agents and editors and whatnot. Now I want to talk about your first full-length book, The Turning Point of Lilla Louise. What is Miss Lilla Louise like, and what is she up to? What is she dealing with, the struggles that will keep folks turning the pages throughout the novel?
Oh, wow. Dr. Lilla Louise, she is a trip. She's a dermatologist, and a very well-off dermatologist who works in a really nice neighborhood. I made it in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, because that's where I'm originally from, so I went back to Pittsburgh with this book. She has a beautiful home, great cars. Her dermatology practice is just thriving, and she has more money than you can ever want,
mm-hmm.
and she's fine. She gets accused of murdering her ex-boyfriend, who's a millionaire, and she can't remember. She has amnesia. So her trials and tribulations, even though, you know, she's educated and she's very smart, she's this can't help her. Her money can't help her get out of this situation because she
mm-hmm.
needs to remember. But when you read the book, you kind of think maybe she has split personalities because she's kind of obnoxious, she's arrogant, she's rude, and then when she's not with her clients, she has a mouth that makes you want to get out of a bar of soap.
Wow.
So during the story, you learn about her tragic past that stirred her away from believing in God, and how God, with this murder, takes something really tragic and turns her whole life around and
mm-hmm.
just develops in her into not a dermatologist but to this wonderful human being. I can't tell you how the story ends, but it's about her struggle, how she regains her memory, how she becomes closer to God and learns to trust in God, and how she's turned away from cursing and being arrogant and rude. All her little mean, nasty things that she used to do that wasn't like of God, she gets delivered from. So, you know, I know a lot of people might get turned off. I didn't write this book to be a Christian story. It just happened to end up being having a Christian theme because she does swear a lot, and I know you can't swear in Christian books, but that was one of her things that she needed delivered of.
Okay.
And so that you see deliverance in this book. And
okay.
I hope the story shows the people that even if you're in the midst of a storm, that it can get turned around and it can turn out to be really good. That's what I hope people get walk away from this book.
Yeah, I think that's going to maybe turn out to be the theme of this, could be of this interview. And who knows, maybe the people who are in a struggle will be the ones who will really, really, really get something, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they might feel like it's just not going to change. I've been in this situation for 10
mm-hmm.
years. It's just not going to change. And to know that it can change, I think that's a, that's a good thing, and it sounds like you're going to show Lila in her darkest hour.
Mm-hmm.
I think people need to see that when they're really struggling, and then to see it turn around. People need to see that struggle as well. Who are some of the other main characters in A Turning Point of Lila Louise, and are any of them your favorites?
Her millionaire lover that she actually supposedly murdered, David DJ Jackson. I actually named him David after my husband.
Okay.
My husband was mad at me. He was like, "You killed me off in that first chapter." So I had to go back and rewrite the whole thing. I made flashbacks with him because he was really tough. I said, "Well, I made you a millionaire." I said, "That's a help for something." So he's one of my favorite characters. I really like Alexander Xavier. That's her lawyer who actually is one of her ex-fiancés.
Okay.
He has a past, Lila Louise.
Okay.
Debbie is her office manager who has a lot to do with how this went down, so I don't want to give anything away
okay.
with it.
All
she's
right.
A kind of crazy character, too. So
okay.
Those three are probably my favorite characters. And I really like Lila Louise. I like how she stands for I think women who have issues, who, like you said, in their darkest hours, come out all right. And I've had those dark hours in my life. You know, people always ask me, how did you get through it? I said, you know, I can't tell you how long your season's going to last. Yeah. My season, personally, was 9 years that I went through hell and back. Yeah. But, you know, God eventually turned it around. But I did find out it takes patience. It takes faith. And you have to believe that God's going to really turn, or whoever you believe in is going to turn it around. And that you have to have patience, and you have to do what you know is right. My season lasted so long because I still was making the wrong choices, and I was still trying to do stuff myself until one day I just said, you know what, God, I'm going to let you do this. And once I did that, my life changed dramatically and moved me from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to California, met my new husband. We've been together almost 13 years. Life is good, and I can only say it's because I finally let go and let God.
Yeah. We have to surrender.
Yes.
I hear an echo on the line for some reason. I don't know where it's coming from. Has anyone other than yourself read the story fully in its entirety? And if so, what are some of the comments that people who have read the manuscript, The Turning Point of Little Louise, fully, what were some of their comments and what were some of their favorite parts in the story?
I've had a few family members and a co-workers that read it that have really liked it. My one friend, Cheryl Burchard, I don't know if you know her, she's a financial analyst and author of Sister CEO.
Okay.
She's read it, and she said there was a page turner. She couldn't put it down.
Right.
But she really enjoyed it. Nobody has really expressed to me their favorite parts. They just really like how she went from being this dermatologist to this woman of God and how her life just changed. So I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from it, and I'm very excited about getting it out there so people can read it. It'll be nice to get people's feedback that aren't friends and, you know, are family members, and really get the people's opinion to see how they like it.
Okay. Some of us get hurt to the point, Loretta, you know, some people are hurt at a very young age due to nothing that they did. They can have an alcoholic parent, a sick parent, and they just are hurt, and I mean severely hurt, at a young age. But some of us get hurt just from almost just little bitty babies. Some of us, we're in our teen years. Some are 20s, 30s. Some we can look back and see, you know what, I kind of brought that on myself. Some people, that's not the case. But some of us get hurt so much that we don't want to trust anymore. I wanted to know if the novel, The Turning Point of Little Louise, does that deal with that kind of hurt?
And then there's one particular scene that Lila Louise talks about, just being hurt over, or I'll tell you part of it, her parents, the way they died. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that just, like, deeply scarred her, and that was her first part of her life that she turned away from God. I mean, it was just a deep hurt that she and her brothers couldn't recover from.
Mm-hmm.
And she describes that hurt. But through the years, that hurt never went away until this murder.
Mm-hmm.
So the murder was the catalyst of her, you know, reevaluating her life and what she's doing and how she's treating people. And if you read the book, you'll see just how that your hurt, you can take that hurt and make it for good. And I think a lot of people need to realize, no matter what you've gone through, you don't have to stay in that moment. You can take it and turn it around. I mean, I've made bad choices. Some were my fault. And then there's things that happened to me that weren't my fault.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to take it and use it and help you become a stronger person. You don't have to live and wallow in it. And, you know, I just think that people just need to know that there is a better life, that you can't come out of your struggle. And
wow.
I just believe that you really have to be prayerful and have faith. And God says all you need is the faith of a mustard seed.
Yeah, and then the fact that you've lived through it, not just writing a story about something you haven't at some point in some way experienced. I tell you, it's a book I've got on my to-read list. The
Great.
Of Lila Louise. Aside from, and I'm going to ask you a little bit more about it. Aside from The Turning Point of Lila Louise, what advice would you give to somebody at a crossroads? And I know you said to tell them, you know, to keep the faith.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had, like, I mean, sometimes that's not even enough. Do you just keep going and some breakthrough just naturally comes on its own? When you feel that badly, does it, and you've been in a situation, something just, I'm talking like 10 years or more, do you just hold on and the light just comes on anyway?
Well, you know, like I said, my when I got divorced, like I said, I was had two children. A bill collector's calling, had the lights turned, boot in the refrigerator. I mean, it was just bad. I was getting paid. I worked at the bank, and thank God that working for the bank, you could have overdraft, and they charge you. I lived paycheck to paycheck, just overdrafting my account just to make it. It was a really dark time in my life, and I said it lasted for 9 whole years. There's points that, you know, family members were getting married and having babies. I didn't even want to go to baby showers. I didn't want to hear about another person getting married. I was just like, oh, my goodness, I hear one more person getting married, I'm going to scream. It's just a point in time that you have to just get to know yourself and figure out what you want to do with your life. But what kept me focused was, I kept going for me, was I know I had these two little girls that depended on me, you know, that I was their only source of survival. I mean, there's times that I was in the bed, me and the girls, at 6 o'clock at night. I would come home, feed them, and we would all get in the bed. There's sometimes I don't even remember how they got in the bed because I was just so depressed.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had a strong mother, thank God for her. And one day, you know, she called me and screamed and hollered at me and said, he's still walking around doing his life, and what are you doing? You're laying in the bed at 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And that kind of hit me, and I was just like, what? And I was like, that makes sense. He's going on with his life, and I'm sitting around moping, depressed for 6 months, you know. That helped me jumpstart me to get out the bed. You know, I was still going to work, but I was going through the motions. I was one of those workers that always got great performance evaluations, and I got my evaluation, and I got like a 5. And I was like, what's this? I said, I'm doing the same thing I've been doing. They say, no, you really aren't. You think you're doing the same thing, but you're not. So, you know, I just think certain wake-up calls happen to you, and you just got to pick yourself up. And like I said, for me, after all that, of having, you know, bill collectors had people taking me to court because I was paying only like $5 for some of my bills, but that's all I could pay. You know, I've been to court. You just got to keep going.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. You just got to find that strength to keep going. And like I said, there was a point in my life when I just said, I can't do this anymore. I'm doing it all wrong. And I just started going to church.
I can't say that. Thank you for sharing that so much with our listeners. This show will be up on off the shelf for weeks and weeks and months to come. And I know many people will listen to it. And who knows, maybe somebody will listen to it and it'll make the difference in their own life. To you do have to just keep going and just keep trusting in God, and something will change. And you have to also want to, you have to see the better life you want to have for yourself. I think you have to also see that.
Yeah,
thank
you have
you
to
so
speak.
Much.
You're welcome. I have to agree with it. You have to speak it into your life that you see good things. You see yourself getting out of debt. You see yourself in whatever situation you want that's good and positive. And you know what else I learned too, which probably will hurt people? You have to cut yourself off of bad influences. You have to surround yourself with good people. If you keep surrounding yourself with bad influences and bad people, that just lingers on you, and you just keep following the same old path, and you never get out of your rut when you stay with people that aren't motivated.
Yeah,
so surround yourself with good people.
I've heard a lot of people say that, and I will second that. Now listening to you, I think I know, but how did you arrive at the title for the book?
My godmother's name is Louise, so that's how I put her in there. And Lila, I don't know where Lila came out of. And then there's a city out here called Fremont, so I just put those together. But the turning point came because in the story, there are so many turning points that make Dr. Lila Louise Fremont the woman that she ends up being at the end of the book. So that's how I came up with the turning point of Lila Louise.
Okay. When does the turning point of Lila Louise, when does it come out? When can our listeners go to the bookstore or your website or Amazon.com and get a copy of the book?
We're on target for June of 2010.
June of next year.
Yes.
Okay.
We're on target.
So you will let us know, right?
Yes, I will. I'll call you back and tell you.
Okay.
Run to the bookstore, get it now. Help me get my sales up.
Okay, Yula, thank you. You have an eye-catching website. I got to tell you, I checked
out
your website through the Onyx Woman, and then I went back last night yesterday doing research for our interview, and I checked it out again. I know there's the colors, there's a vibe or something at your website. But did you create, and I want to give our listeners your URL so they can go check out your website for themselves.
Okay.
It's www.loritawritesforyou, and I love that writes for you part, but it's www.loritawrites4u, just the letter U, .com, loritawritesforyou.com. So at your website, did you create your website yourself?
Well, I got to give out a shout-out to Joseph Clark Hill. He's the one that put it together for me, but I gave him the concept. I knew I wanted the colors red and purple because red is power.
Mm-hmm.
And then purple, of course, is royalty. And then I just like to touch a gold with it. So those were how I came up with the three colors. I told him, you know, I wanted some books in there. And I told him how I wanted the opening. I never saw anything open up with the book. And then
okay. He's
the one to put, like, my picture and the words of the reader writes for you on the other side of the book. And I said, but I wanted to flip open. I was like, is that in my budget? And he started laughing. He's like, yeah, I can do it within your budget because I have no idea about creating a website. Actually, Cheryl Burchard introduced me to him. He lives, I believe, in Philadelphia, too, or Baltimore, rather. He lives in Baltimore. And we did it through the Internet. I went to his website and looked it up, and I liked what he did. I emailed him and told him my concept, and we just worked from there, and I really like it. It's everything I wanted in the website.
It's sharp. It really looks nice.
Thank you.
Do you plan on putting excerpts so people can get little teasers?
Lila Louise is on there now. I'm working on another book called Shattered, Broken, and Reborn. As soon as I get that fine-tuned and start sending it out, I'm going to put a snippet of that on there. So, if you keep checking back, it'll give you updates of like when my books are coming out and other projects I'm working on.
All right. I know you're also a children's book writer. If you could just tell us a little bit about your children's book and give us the title of that book.
Okay. I'm actually shopping this one out for publication. It's called Grandma, How Do You Know God Is Real? It's a touching story about a curious 6.5-year-old girl named Kendra.
Okay.
Who spends a few weeks of her summer vacation with her grandma. She awakens one bright and sunny morning and asks her grandma, how does she know God is real?
Mm.
So Kendra and grandma spend the day and set out to find the answer of just how real God is.
Uh-huh.
So that's the premise of the book. I really like it. I don't have an illustrator, so I just send it out, you know, which is hopefully somebody will pick it up. But I really like this book. My friend asked me one day, she said, you know, you should write a children's book. And I have been playing in my mind about the concept, how do you know God is real, as a poem.
Right.
And for weeks before she even said that, so when she told me about a children's book, I was like, And I have a granddaughter, she's 4 now, and I was like, we take her to church whenever she's in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that might be a question she asked me one day. So I set out, and you know, I said a prayer, and next thing I know, Grandma, How Do You Know God Is Real, was born. So.
Wow. And when are you shopping that book around?
Yeah, I'm shopping that around. So I had thought about self-publishing, but we'll see what happens.
I love that title and the concept of the book. I really do. Do you plan to write more children's books? Because I don't think, especially like multicultural children's books, when I go into major bookstores, I don't see a lot of them.
There isn't.
So I don't think they could ever be too many. Do you plan on writing more children's books?
I would like to. You know, like I said, when I sit at the computer, I really, it's whatever I feel led to do, and I hope I get led to do more children's books. I really like it. It was a really fun project, and I can't wait to see it come to life with the illustrations. But I would love to do more children's books. I believe if we get our kids, you know, teach them young and get them into reading, and it falls back on that reading and education piece, we'll have better children. So I would love to. That would love to do that.
Was that a difficult switch for you, going from writing for adults? I know they say as a children's book writer, and I've heard that's one of the more difficult audiences to write for because authors tend to want to write down to a child and not remembering that children are very, very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a difficult transition switch for you, going from writing for an adult audience to writing for a children's audience?
No, I just really thought about if I was having a conversation with my granddaughter, Camilla, how I would explain it to her. And, you know, I thought about how I could explain to her that, like you said, not talking down to her, but make it interesting and so that she could understand it. And so that's how I went about the project, and that's how it came out that it's written for probably anybody young, probably till 7 or 8 years old that would, I really think, would enjoy the book. And it's not, I think it's written in a fun way that you would get a good understanding, and it's not, you wouldn't be talked down to. You're not dummy down, let me put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like an exciting, I'm imagining from what mm-hmm. you said, it's like an adventuresome book with different
yes.
things happening. They are like, they really are just observing what's happening in life to see the signs that God is behind this.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite parts of the book is that Kendra is sitting at the dining room table in the morning, and she sees her grandpa there, and she says, "So, Grandpa, how do you know God is real?" And he almost chokes on his food, and the grandma starts laughing, and he's like, "Oh, I think you better ask your grandma about that, because he didn't go to church." So, but when I was writing that part, you know, I could just visit that some little curious girl sitting there and asking her grandpa, and you know, somebody that doesn't go to church almost wanting to pass out because he doesn't have an answer for her.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think we do know whether I understand going to church, that's what the focus is on. But I think we know as God's children whether we go or don't go to church.
Right.
I think that's a good, mm-hmm. I mean, a humorous scene in the book. Were you a voracious reader when you were a little girl? I find that many writers say that they were. And do you think that if the habit of reading a lot as a child, if you did, influenced your writing as an adult?
I used to, when I was younger, like to read mystery books, and I used to read somewhat. And then, like I said, when I stopped, got in trouble for that writing, that paper, I stopped mm-hmm. everything. I stopped reading, I stopped writing and everything. So as an adult, you know, I read all the time. I'm in a book club, and I love to read now. And one thing, too, that I would love to get back somehow to the community, some type of bookstore that just features a whole bunch of African-American authors. When I was younger, you know, growing up in the 70s, you never heard of these, like a Evelyn Harris or Eric Jerome Dickey. I mean, I didn't realize until, like I said, my adult life that there were so many talented
yeah.
African-American writers out there. And, you know, now I hate to say it, that's all I read is African-American writers, because there's just so many out there.
Yeah.
They tell beautiful, wonderful stories. And our children don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
They're not taught that, and the school libraries don't have these authors either.
I will say, when I was younger, I think a lot of writers self-published because the major publishers just didn't think there was an audience
mm-hmm.
for African Americans. So of course Terry McMillan bust that door down.
Right.
But when I was younger, it was Maya Angelou
mm-hmm.
and Gwendolyn Brooks. Those were the two that I knew of when I was young. It was like hardly no one. So I can only imagine how tough it was for them to make a name for themselves in the industry. But I appreciate every author that, because it just makes it easier for the people coming up behind us. What is your story, Through the Fire? You sure know how to pick some good titles. What is your story, Through the Fire, about? And where can, you know, our listeners hit Off the Shelf and other readers, when can we expect to see that story on the market?
Through the Fire is actually coming out, and I believe, first quarter of next year. That's an anthology. It's going to be an anthology called Crazy Faith, and the editor for that is Nicole Bradley. So I sent her my story, and she thought it was wonderful, and she's going to put it in the book. Crazy Faith is about people who have a little faith or a lot of faith, and how it's basically a testimony book. So it's a story about my life and how I struggled, like I said, shared with you before, going through the divorce, bill collectors, all that, and how my journey through life is a synopsis of it, probably about a 3-page synopsis of my life. And that's what's called Through the Fire, because I went through the fire, you know, and
yeah.
I came out all right.
Yes. Yeah. Thank God. Praise
mm-hmm.
the Lord for that. That's a blessing. That's a blessing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And now you know if you ever struggled, hopefully never like that again, but you know you can
mm-hmm.
get through it.
Oh, yeah. I never worry about it. You know, we're in this recession, and, you know, the housing market is bad out here in California.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband, he's always worried about what if, you know, one of us lose our jobs. And I was like, honey, I'm not even worried about that. I don't know how to live off of 90. And I knew when I was working back in Pittsburgh,
yeah.
I knew every 99-cent value meal restaurant, and
yeah.
and that's how I survived. I mean,
yeah.
I could. My one girlfriend said, You're the only person I know that could stretch a dollar. She would call me and say, I got like $5. How do I make it to the end of the week? I mean, you just learn these survival skills, you know?
Yeah.
I told him, I said, you know, I've gone through, had to go to a food bank at a church before. I had to go get food stamps. And, you know, those are the most devastating things you think at the time in your life. I mean, I was called the working poor. I was working, making a salary, but my bills and not trying to keep up with the mortgage and the kids, I just couldn't survive. So, you know, going to the welfare office was, for me, felt humiliating, like I was going to die. But you know what? I survived it all.
Yep.
And that's what Through the Fire is about, survival. And that you, like I said, you can't make it. No, when you're going through the midst of a storm, you don't think it's ever going to end. You don't see your way out. But I'm here to tell you, there is a way out. You just got to believe in yourself and believe that there is a higher power. There is a God that will help you get through it. And then, like I said, sometimes you got to learn a lesson. Like I said, I was hard-headed. My lesson the last 9 years until I finally said, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, you're going to stay in it or go keep going back through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like school. And if you keep flunking that course, you're going to get put back. Get that lesson, so you have to keep going through it. That's so true. That is so true. You're a wife, a mother, and a grandmother, and a beautiful woman. I went to your website. How do you manage to balance all three plus, right?
Well, fortunately, right now, all my children are grown and out the house and living their life and doing well. So working and writing, I'm still struggling with that because when I get home, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
So I usually probably on the weekend is when I try to get in there and write. I'm working on my edits now, so I have to do a little bit each night. But it's really hard because it seems like my creativity is kind of down during the week because I'm just working a 9-to-5, you know, with the challenges of that job. Is really hard. So that's the struggle. And I have to thank God my kids are out the house because I don't have to worry about it. My husband, if he gets hungry, he can go make dinner. I don't have to really cook it.
Okay.
You know, so I don't have to deal with that too. But it is a struggle trying to find that balance.
Mm-hmm. But you seem to be pulling it off because you've got stories coming out and books coming out. And so, you know, it may not seem that way to you, but it, you obviously are pulling it off. Years ago, and this is something that I want to talk about briefly, and I saw this on heard this on a radio show as well, and I think it still bears repeating. Years ago, and even today, but especially I think more so years ago, people didn't really go after their dreams, or they would talk themselves after their dreams. And I just want to focus on the female side of it.
Mm-hmm.
When a lot of times a woman becomes a mother or a wife, she just puts. I couldn't imagine how many women have put their dreams and their life on hold. I know some personally, just to be a wife. Or mother, and I'm not putting that down in any kind of way, but do you think I think that in the long run that's not the best way to go because you kind of take some of your joy, I think, that you also let go. Do you think that mothers or women, to be quote unquote good women, do you think they should sacrifice their artistic pursuits and their dreams in order to completely focus on their spouse or their children?
That's a good question. You know, I think to be effective that you should, like, find that balance that you need to go after what you want to but not sacrifice your family. Like me, for instance, I stopped going to school to be a mother. I stopped everything. I did raise my kids, and they came out great, but a part of me was still not fulfilled, and I think women need to fulfill themselves. Just because you want to fulfill yourself doesn't mean that you're neglecting your spouse or your kids. It's helping you become a better person. I have one friend of mine that she raised her family. She was a single mother for a while, and she got married. And she went back to school, got her BA, and then she went and got her master's. So it is, you know, it can be done. I have my oldest daughter. She's has a daughter now, and she's struggling with going to school and being a mother. And I was like, I know it's hard, but you can do it. Women have done it generations before you, and they're going to do it after you. You just have to find that balance. So I think you need to do what's good for you, do you, and still be able to do the other parts. Because being a mother and a wife, that's just part of you. That doesn't make the whole you. So you need to find a balance to make you whole.
I agree completely, and I say that this happened when I was an adult. My grandmother, we were sitting down talking, and she was telling me how she thought. I always thought women, my grandmother's age, could run circles around women, you know, who grew up when I did, and I grew up in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
She said, no. She said, yeah, we didn't have the microwaves and the, you know, the conveniences, the appliance conveniences and things that you all have. She said, but the way y'all go out to work and rip and run up down these highways, she said, we didn't do that. We were home, you know, cooking and taking care of the kids. She said,
mm-hmm.
I don't see how y'all do what y'all do. And my grandmother told me she must have been in her 70s that she always wanted to be a school teacher. But she let somebody laugh at her when she raised that idea, and she never pursued it. And that was one thing that when she passed, something she really wanted to do that she never did. And so, and she was very focused on her family,
mm-hmm.
and a wonderful wife, mother, and grandmother. But I've heard women say that, you know, I have my kids, and I just stopped doing this, I stopped doing that. Some women go back to it, but I think that it's important to try to find a balance. Because often men don't put their dreams on hold.
No, I don't think they ever do. It always falls back on the women.
To become husbands, they don't put their
mm-hmm.
dreams on hold. But I think to find a balance to do it all, I think is important. So you, not in your 70s like my grandmother was, or 80s, and you still say, you know, I wish I had become a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so I think it is important for women to go after their dreams. And I certainly encourage the women who are listening here to Off the Shelf to find a way to balance it and to do just that. I wanted to ask you next, Loretta, what have you learned about the book industry since you became a published author that you didn't know before?
Ooh, that is fickle. You could be, I mean, like anything, that you can be, one minute you could be up and the next minute you could be down. It takes a lot of patience, I mean, to get things done. I guess this whole journey has taught me more about being patient. You know, book sales have been down lately.
Mm-hmm.
There's more push for the e-book since Kindle and the iPhones came out. So that, since I started writing, that's probably one of the major changes, because the Kindle wasn't out, and now everything's more electronic. So for me, I like the feel of a book.
Yeah, I do.
There's something about the feel of the book and
mm-hmm.
holding it and the book jacket. Even though on the e-book you're still getting the book jacket, it's still not the same. But I think that's the wave of the future, and I think that's been the biggest adjustment for me, is knowing that, you know, the e-book might come out first before the novel and all those other type of things. So,
yeah, and I think a lot of times as a writer, and we only have a few more minutes left,
mm-hmm.
but as a writer, I know I had these huge dreams for our listeners who might be thinking of becoming a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, I had these huge dreams. The life of a writer was almost like being a movie star. And then when I got into it, I was like, whoa. And the one thing that surprised me was how much marketing and promoting an author has to put in to get the word out on their book. I know that's something Terry McMillan had said years ago. That's how she really got her book off. She just did a massive amount of marketing and promotion with I think it was Waiting to Exhale.
Mm-hmm.
She had already written two other books before that. That's what she had to do, and that was a surprise to me as an author, and then the business side of the
mm-hmm.
business, just becoming aware of that.
Yeah, can I say one more thing?
Sure,
that was a surprise, like you said, the marketing, because you always thought it was glamorous and that you go on all these book tours and they do all that, but now these publishing companies don't have that money, so you got to do it yourself. And then you know how you think you're always going to get these big royalties? That's a farce, too. And then I didn't know that authors only got paid either every 6 months or once a year. So that was, I mean, I'm just learning all these different things that you thought that was going to be. You can't quit your day job, put it that way.
Yeah, until you get a bestseller. But
right.
Most publishing houses, I think they pay royalties, I think, once a month or once a quarter.
Mm-hmm, but the smaller ones don't.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately.
Unless you could negotiate a deal with them. But
right.
Most
mm-hmm.
of them do once a month or once a quarter. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and the royalties generally, unless you're selling a lot of copies, aren't that good. Unless you can strike a deal where you can also sell books on your own through your website, and you can
mm-hmm.
use that money yourself.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, because
mm-hmm.
we have only six more minutes left,
mm-hmm.
Who are some of your favorite writers, and what is it about their work that you like the most?
Oh, let me see. Probably one of my favorite authors is L.A. Banks, Leslie Estelle Banks. I love her. Have you ever read her Vampire Huntress series?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Oh, my goodness. I like those type of scary books.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just like how she brings her characters to life. And, I mean, who would love a vampire, really, seriously? But she just brings them to life in their stories and everything. So she's one of my favorite ones. I love Eric Jerome Dickey.
Okay.
P- Pearl Cleage.
Tana Verdu,
Mary Morrison. I'm kind of all over the place with my authors. Mm-hmm.
Pearl Cleage is
Yeah, she's like one of my favorites too. So those probably are my top five favorite authors.
Okay. Are you planning to, we're talking about marketing and tours with our last 5 minutes. Are you planning to tour after the release of your book? Or if so, can you tell us some of the places that you're going to visit so our listeners can look out for you?
Well, I'm working on that now. I'm figuring out what I'm going to do. So keep checking my website. I have a bunch of girlfriends that are like all over the United States. So I figured that I would hit each one of them with told them that they had to sponsor a book party for me. So So I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to, you know, while I'm there, I'm going to check out the local bookstore. So I'm working on that. I haven't gotten that far into the development plan, but I'm working on that. But keep checking my website because I'm going to have the calendars there, and I'll have my events up so you can keep track of me.
All right, and that's www.LaritaWrites4U.com.
Yes.
She'll keep us up to date at our website. I think that's a great idea that you had. And then hit all those bookstores that,
mm-hmm.
that you can when you go into those cities. And that kind of segues into the next question I was going to ask you as we're coming down to the close.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you were a member of Sisters on the Reading Edge Book Club. Do you think it's really important for writers to join book clubs to continue to read good books and also to get the word out about their own titles?
Yeah, I think it's a great avenue. I mean, our book club, we've had authors call in. We don't have any famous people that are in our book club right now, but we have authors that have called in that, you know, we ask them questions, and I think that's important for an author to stay connected to the people they're writing for so they can get feedback, and I think that's really important. I plan on staying with Sisters on the Reading Edge for as long as I can. They've been great friends to me, and I really enjoy them.
Okay. If you could change only one thing about the book industry, just one thing right now, what would you change?
Let me see. I think the marketing aspect is really bad. You know, you have these great authors that are up and coming that you don't even really seem like they help develop anymore. They just publish your book and then that's it. You know, they just kind of send you out there. So I wish it would go back to the old way where they help develop you, help set more of your marketing up for you, you know, guide you to how you do your book tours and all that kind of stuff, teach more of a teaching role. I don't see that. So I think that's what I would change.
All right, we got 3 minutes, and I want to ask you two more questions.
Okay.
What do you love most about being a writer?
I love sitting at that computer and just typing away, and when I'm finished, I have this product, and I'm like, whoo, where'd that come from? I just love seeing, you know, it's just like, I guess maybe when a painter paints on a canvas, and then when it's finished, he has this beautiful masterpiece. Well, I guess that's like how I feel when I don't even know where the words come from, and then when I look at it, it's this piece of art here that I can say, oh, I wrote this, you know. So I enjoy that. That's probably my favorite part. And also, my stories so far, like especially my poetry that I've been reading around in church and different places, they seem to touch people. So I like seeing that aspect of people really saying, oh, that really helped me out.
Oh, that is so good. What last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf, Larita?
Whatever your dream is, keep going. My favorite scripture is I can do Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Got to keep God first. Keep your dreams alive, and you can do it. Anything is possible. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it.
Okay.
Because they're a liar.
Okay. You can do. We can do all things.
All things. Mm-hmm.
All things. Thank you so much, Larita,
thank you.
For sharing your talent, your gifts. You are so, so open and candid. Your work and you, thanks for sharing you, yourself,
thank you.
With us here at Off the Shelf. We appreciate you being here with us at Off the Shelf, and we look forward to your books when they come out. And she's again at www.LaritaWrites4U.com. Just hold on for a second after we close, Larita. To our listeners, I want to thank you for listening to Off the Shelf. And please tell your family, your friends, colleagues, and book lovers everywhere to tune into us here at Blog Talk Radio as we're going into our 6th year. In the coming days, we'll continue to bring you feature interviews with established, best-selling, and up-and-coming writers and publishers and editors and agents and others movers and shakers in the book business. Please visit me online at www.chistell.com. And please pick up a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up, which, again, is available at www.chistell.com, or you can also request a copy of Long Walk Up from your local bookstore or Amazon.com, Cush City, Borders, and Walmart. And again, thank you for tuning in to Off the Shelf, and remember that you are valued, loved, and truly blessed. Please stop in and support Loretta, the author of, I hope I say this right, Lila Louise, The Turning Point for Lila Louise, which should be out in June of next year. And then she has a children's book that she's shopping around, and we'll look for that. And please visit her at her website and support her as well. Keep writing and reading great books. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Goodbye. You still there?
I'm crying.
Okay, we finished. I had to wait to the countdown. See, the countdown, I either finish sometimes a couple of seconds sooner, mm-hmm. and I don't want listeners just to hear a silence, so I had to kind of just do it just right. Oh, you were fabulous. And that.
Was
and,
I? Oh, I don't know what I said.
You
like
were fabulous. I'll send you the link when they get through streaming.
Okay.
I'll send you the link. But I can tell when I'm doing a good interview because it goes fast. And it did go fast.
Oh, my goodness. So I did okay?
You did fabulous. Fabulous, fabulous.
Thank you. Oh, I'm crying.
Oh, and you definitely made me want to go out and get your book, so I know you did a good job.
Oh, thank you.
So when it comes out, let me know, and I'd like to have you back on, and then possibly also in my newsletter, so as soon as your book comes out, so we can start getting you some more exposure.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I didn't want to say too much about when you was asking me about the publishing thing, because my publisher kind of flipped the script on me. I was supposed to have a novel out first, and then they switched it to an e-book, so I was a little traumatized.
Okay.
I was like, whoo! My husband's like, what's wrong with you? I said, you just don't understand the feel of a book and the cover. I mean, I was traumatized for hours. And he's like, Loretta, you're blessed you got published. How many people can say they got picked up a publisher?
Yeah.
I said, it's not the same, anybody. I could put the e-book up myself. And he's like, oh, my goodness. He said, it's going to work out the way God wants it to. He said, don't worry about it.
Okay. Well, we're going to support you. We're going to support you.
You know what? I really appreciate it because, I mean, when you asked me to do it, that's why I wrote you back. I was like, I don't have anything out yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thank you for the opportunity to help, you know, somebody that's up and coming. Yeah, God's going to bless you, and I thank you for blessing me.
I thank you. So you have a good day.
Thank you very much.
All right.
And you'll send me the link, right?
I will do that.
Okay. Thank you, Denise.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.